Welcome, I'm Moshe Ferber.
And I am Ariel Munafon.
And this is the Silver Lining Podcast, a podcast about security architecture.
Good morning, everyone. We are in Israel. Winter is coming, or we are in the middle of the winter. Good morning, Moshe.
Good morning. Christmas is coming, basically.
Yeah, so no, I started to think about my voice, so and good morning, Ori.
Hey, good morning. It's not only Christmas, it's also Hanukkah.
Yeah. So the season's coming. Yeah. It's currently in English they say happy seasons.
Hi, that's good.
Yes. So good morning, everyone. We are here with Ori Troyana from PayU. Good morning, Ori.
Good morning.
And we are here to talk about a little bit about application security, fintech, startups that are joining large companies, but I'm moving ahead of time. First, let's introduce our guest. He's coming from PayU, which is a large fintech company, and he's currently global head of product security at PayU. And I know Ori for many years, starting from his days at Micro Focus, and it's a great pleasure to have you, Ori.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I will. So it's a pleasure to be here. And first of all, Ori Troyana, not Troyana. Everyone mistakes in that way. And it goes back to HP software before Micro Focus. Micro Focus was like a spin merge of HP. I'll tell a little bit about myself. First of all, I'm an husband and I'm a father of three kids, which takes a lot of my time, but still give me a lot of time to do other cool stuff. And I'll elaborate today. I love to run long distance, which is also fun and give you a way to take things out and like think about some of your ideas.
How long do you run?
My longest run was 25K. Oh, nice. I ran half marathon, but these days, due to lack of time mainly, it's like 10Ks every like two times a week, something like that, with friends. Not from the industry, because I want to think about other stuff as well.
good point.
Yeah, it's like at home, I never talk about security, right? Application security, because my wife is doing something else entirely. So it is a good place to talk about other stuff as well. Okay, so about myself a little bit. I'm coming with a development background, starting from my army days. I have like degrees in programming, computer science, mathematics, and I think that gave me the best background that bring me to these days as a head of product security. Later on, when I decided that I don't want to purely develop products, I want to help people and I want to secure things. Back days in the unit, I understood that security is something really important and people are not focusing enough on application security in general. No one knew in Israel back then what is application security. Everyone talked about infrastructure, IT, network security, ways to connect to the network, etc. So I understood there is some kind of a gap. OWASP just started back then, and I'll talk about OWASP in a few words later on. So when I left the army, I joined a consultancy, global consultancy company called ComSec, and I traveled a lot. I loved it back then before I had kids. and I did a lot of hands-on pen testing, white reviews, code reviews, certification, my first days with PCI, etc. It was a lot of fun and very, very hard days because you do a lot and all the responsibilities on you as a consultant. And I led a team back then of four consultants, so it was really fun. After that, I joined HP. In HP, I was an application security architect. It was the first time that I really took responsibility of application security. As a consultant, you find things and you go, right? You leave it to someone else to do. Most likely, someone will call you like 3-4 months later and ask you some questions, and that's it. You need to, let's say, defend your findings, and that's it. And now, as an application security architect in HP Software, it was a global company. I work with many, many different products in Israel and across the world, modernized and legacy. It was the first time that I took responsibility over a few years on findings, on threat modeling processes on SSDLC in general. We created the process back then in HP, and we were part of the product organization, sorry, the development organization. And it was fun. I learned so much working with people, finding the real stuff, prioritizing what is important versus not important. I understood what is moving fast. As a consultant, you don't understand that because, as I said, you do something and that's it. And when you are part of it, you really understand what is moving fast. Even though in HP software, part of the product moved really slow. But some of them moved really, really, really fast. And it was the early days of SaaS, HP SaaS, and AWS started back then. So everyone wanted to shift to AWS, even though no one really understood what it means. But we did it. It was a lot of fun. Then Micro Focus, there were like three cycles of HP software.
My memories from back then is that I think you gave me the first call about container security.
Yes. Yeah, back then we were in a small group that Tomer Gershoni established in HP Software, and we started talking about cloud security, container, Kubernetes just started at the end of my days in HP Software, and we were the first touching that, I think, globally, and it was so fun. You couldn't find anything in Google, right? Everyone looked there, and we like founded that, but you know, things evolved since then, a lot of fun. After that, I joined, I moved from HP or Micro Focus to Citibank, to the innovation lab, the security innovation lab that Itai Eger established in Israel. And also, a lot of fun, I was the head of application security innovation globally. Many, many challenges in a huge organization of more than like 300,000 people globally that you need to lead what will be the vision of application security in different organization, really different organization in different places, lack of communication, lack of different technologies, etc. A lot of challenges that gave me a real edge of what technically application security means, like the tools, the processes in different organization, different sizes, different methodologies of work, different even, let's say, a way of thinking of things, because you think as Israelis, you think about something, you want to do it and achieve it quick. But when it is a huge organization, quick means like 3 years. That's quick in a huge organization. When we shifted to the cloud, we started saying the cloud like 4 years ago. And then 3 years ago, we started deploying things on the cloud. And that was really quick because, you know, as a huge financial organization, you need to think about so many things, compliance, security, everything need to move and be secured before you deploy it to the cloud because of all the compliances and certification. So giants like Google, AWS, Azure, they come to you and ask for your like suggestion, what you need to do. And I work with many, many startups. It was really amazing time. Then I decided to move, and this is the point I'm going to talk today. I moved to a company, a startup called Zuz. Actually, it was not a startup when I moved there, but it started as a startup. It was acquired by a company called Payu, and now it's Zuz, a Payu company. It was a fintech, it is still a fintech company. Zuz is a technical gateway for payment services. It's some kind of a very smart routing services for payment service providers. And Payu is actually the PSP, the payment service provider, globally. Payu is something like an envelope of companies, and there are many different small startups that are being acquired in different areas in the world, like EMEA and Central America, etc. And every day there can be a new acquisition. So there are a lot of challenges around culture and technology and processes around application security, or there are challenges in general, but I'm going to talk about the application security. And us as Zuz coming into Payu means a lot of things to me, because it's like, what should we do in a global company that has security in general? Can we change them to do the way we think security and application security or product security, which include the above, we want them to do.
Okay, perfect. So this is what we're going to focus on. But just before that, you're a member of OWASP Israel. You're co-founder of the board members, right? With
yes.
Shira, that was here a couple of episodes ago. So first of all, thank you for your contribution to the community. Tell us a couple of words what you plan in OWASP in 2020.
Yeah, so thank you very much for reminding me that. So yeah, I'm co-leading OWASP with Shira for almost 6 months now. And we are thinking about how we can evolve the community, make it live again versus a few years back or the last few years, make it live again like a few years back. And what we want to do is make more events, small events, like not only meetups, but workshops and talks over lunch, etc. And the plan is like to do next month, if we did the meetup last month, next month to do a workshop around node security or Docker security or cloud security, something hands-on that people come to 2-3 hours and actually do things, not only listen. And later this year, we are planning to have the yearly AppSec.IL event. We'll share more details in the coming weeks. We are working on that these days. We are actually scheduling the meeting, so we'll talk about that.
So if you want a cloud security workshop, you know who to call to.
All right, thank you.
Okay, so we are here to talk about what happens when a large company like PayU, which is really unique. I mean, she's the company, as you described it, sounds like a service catalog. I mean, they have R&D centers scattered around the world, right? From different acquisitions, and they try to merge it all. So basically, our talk would be how a small startup is coming into a larger company. How do they decide which, I don't know, development pipelines to produce? How do they produce the same CI/CD? How do they incorporate security across different application, different services, different languages, platforms, like different platform of developments, these challenges, which is really interesting. So first of all, tell us a little bit more about the challenges that you encountered. I mean, I understand that you came into Zuz/PayU right after the acquisition, right into the merger. So there are two different companies trying to merge in. What challenges did you encounter?
Okay. So you summed it up, but I will elaborate a little bit more. So as you mentioned, and I mentioned earlier, PayU is like a it's not a subset, it's like different groups of companies in different areas. And every big company have the communication a challenge, right? If it is a huge company, there are communication issues. And in our case, it's not a huge company, but there are different companies, small companies that are being built into one. And you, it's okay. We have like, if I'll say a little bit more. So PayU is like three organizations. It's like credit organization, global payment organization, and India in different sizes. Credit is the smallest, GPO is bigger, and India is also big, but it is a different in market at the moment.
In India, it's like a different kind of business. This is why you're
like
separated from the others.
Something like that. There in India, there are a lot of businesses under the hood of PayU India. It's the same company, right? But it is moving a little bit different. And I'm working with them, but currently I'm focusing on credit and global payment organization. So some of the challenges coming from different culture in the company, in different companies, like different countries do different things. They are used to different methodologies of work. They are built even differently in the way they develop or the way they interact or the way they even located in the office. I think that PayU as a company are more, they have more culture to work from the office. It's not like United States working from the home. So that's okay. It's easier for us to control it. And I can say that technology stack, for example, each country, it's amazing. Like each country I visit or each site, we call it now tribes, not sites, but I'll talk about it in a second. Each site has a different approach to technology. It's amazing. If you are going to Central America, Central America stack of technologies is different from the stack of technologies in United States or Israel.
You're talking about the cloud provider, the development languages, the totally. Web servers, yeah. all of them?
Totally. From the, totally. From the monitoring to the open source up to the cloud provider and the languages they develop, etc. I take it to the extreme, right? Because everyone knows about Kubernetes and they will not use something else, but actually they use Docker Swarm for example, that people, I don't know, people don't use it, I think, most of them.
I think it's end of life, yeah. So
exactly. but we can talk about it later. And in different countries, you see the same challenges around technology. And you have a different challenge in each country when you talk with people, right? Everyone, you can talk with everyone and you can get to them. But actually, the way they accept what you are saying or the approach you show them is actually different. Because if you are coming to someone in Central America, it's fun. You can talk with them. They're actually listening to you. But if you're coming to someone in Europe, in Central Europe, not necessarily they will accept what you want. They know better from you, for example. And you see that. It's not the first time I see it in PayU. I already used to it when I was a consultant. And in Citi, for example, it's different. The way you talk with people and the way you need to brainstorm and suggest ideas or solutions, it's just totally different in different places. And last thing is, I think the organization structure. Each company is built different. Mm-hmm. And you have small companies, for example, in Romania, the technology part, the development or the engineering, we call it, is very small. In Poland, for example, it's much, much bigger. In Central America, it's really big. In Israel, it's average, I think, like 50, 60 developers, something like that. And the organization build different, like smaller. Sometimes it can be a squad of 3 people, but there is more engineering managers, like someone can manage 4 squads of 3 people. In other areas, it will be 1 engineering manager that manage more people. It's different, right? And now we are as a startup, Zuz, that move really, really quick. In some sites, we move quick. Some sites move really slow. Depends on the technology stack. Some sites, like us, are purely born to the cloud. And other sites, purely born to bare metal, on-prem data centers. And it means different approaches. Now we want to move everything quicker because we want to change and improve the way we do things, right? If we reduce the time to deploy, we can release more features, we can get more business. And if we move to the cloud, maybe we can remove some of the costs we have, the sync costs we have today in the data centers, etc. So now a small company, a small startup, need the mandate to change the technology stack, the culture, the processes in all these companies that anyway, from start, they are not really interacting. Each one has its own mandate. So we will talk about that more.
Yeah. Okay. But which level do you receive this? Is there like a CTO or R&D manager at the top? Like who is the one that's making these decisions?
So I think that's part of the solution. But what we see, I'll talk about it in, I'll give you the context. Okay. I'll tell about the history a little bit. So PayU is, I think, it's founded in Amsterdam or Holland, something like that. But after a few years, the technology founder, you can say, or the CTO left. And the company, it was, I think, a year ago or a year and a half ago, really just before I joined Zuz. And the decision, and let's say Zuz just acquired, and the decision was to appoint Zuz CTO as PayU GPO CTO, which is a big decision. Mm-hmm. Like we want to see the change coming from there, right?
Yeah,
we want it as a global company, but we want the decision making to come from that CTO, which is located in Israel. And one more decision that came right after that, we want the global VP of engineering to come from Zuz, right? So the VP of engineering, Adito Paz, which is my manager, is now the global VP engineering, which means she manages all the different sites engineering leads. and a few more. We'll talk about that in the solution. But now that's really big steps for a company to say we want a change. We understand we need to change, that these are the way we support the change and give you the mandate to do it.
Mm-hmm. So when you came into PayU, how much other companies were in this portfolio?
I think that there is a company in South Africa, in Poland, in Romania. In South Africa it's one, in Poland it's one, I think Romania it's one, in Central America it is eight companies that were acquired along the years, and now there is a lot we are moving, or we are, let's say, pushing as product security, not totally application security, but product security, to sunset some of the legacy products and give the business the way to to focus on one modernized or two modernized solutions, reduce the cost, reduce the risk that we have today from certification, compliance, application security attack, in IT attacks, whatever, and focus. So that's part of the way we try to increase the product security globally. So how many I said? Something like 10, yeah. 11.
Okay. Just to understand the state of mind, like the company you bought in Romania, do they have an advantage in the local market? This is why you bought them? Or they have some kind of technology that can influence worldwide?
Okay, it's a good question. A few years back, I'm not sure about the number of years, Naspers, it's like a venture capital, decided they want to move into payments industry because it is a fintech area. It is growing rapidly, and they decided they want to establish PayU. So Naspers, that's something maybe I neglected initially. Yeah. So PayU is part of, it's owned by Naspers. Naspers also a company from Holland. And as I mentioned earlier, the first company in PayU was acquired in Brazil, if I remember correctly. And then moving forward, Naspers are going into market to market and deciding that this company will give them an edge in the payment industry in that region, right? So Romania, for example, yeah, they have a platform that control part of the big part of the payments in Turkey, for example, or other locations. So it makes sense to buy it. Not necessarily the technology stack is amazing, they don't care, but it controls the market and give good revenue.
So some of the companies are not leading it technologically, but they're leading it from the business.
Exactly. Okay. And going forward, they continue to, Naspers/PayU continue the acquisition, and they look in other regions. They continue to do it. And they plan to, have the edge in the payment industry in the regions I mentioned, because they are growing much rapidly than others, like EMEA and Central America.
Okay. From your experience, do you need different technology tactics? Like, for instance, this technology is, the Romanian company technology is very good for Turkey because they use these tools, and this is why they're better in Turkey? Or you can bring the same technology from Israel to Turkey and it would work the same? And is it a business advantage or technology advantage, the fact that they're working in Turkey and Romania?
I think that acquiring a company that controls the market is an advantage versus inventing the wheel. We know, in fact, that trying to establish a PSP in a country, takes time and effort.
Payment
service provider. Yes, okay. Sorry for the initial. It is the company that actually take the credit card and move the money from account to account. The company PSP is the company that the merchant needs in order to connect to the schema networks, for example, the credit cards,
the credit
network.
Card companies.
Yes, exactly. And this is one of the reasons PayU were, I think, acquired and selected as the getting the mandate to change things. It is really hard to create a payment service provider, a PSP. It really, really hard for a merchant to integrate with the PSP because they need a lot of development effort, integration effort, okay. etc. Even a process effort because they need to define processes manually. For example, in Israel, you need to connect to Shva as a merchant. You need to connect to some kind of a local PSP, mm-hmm. right? And make sure that that PSP will take the money, take the credit card and move the money. And the APIs, the actual APIs that you connect, the technical ones, it is different from a PSP company to another one. So Zuz wrap everything. Mm-hmm. Initially, Zuz was agnostic to the PSP. It's still agnostic. It still have many, many, many acquirers behind the scene, many plugins that you can do everything seamlessly. So the decision to take a PSP that control the market and have an integration, it's really good because you don't need the effort to integrate new merchants or the merchant to a new PSP. Mm-hmm. And now one of the challenges for Zuz, how Zuz become the global platform because most of the merchants are already integrated with the legacy solutions or the platform that exists that Naspers/PayU acquired. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the solutions we take, like in the technology processes, okay. how do you move the customers to a new platform seamlessly? Is there a way to do it? Not always there is a way.
It looks really difficult to, you know, to merge into a biggest company, and not that you did that, you also need to start cooperating or forcing your methodologies to others. So
yes, totally. And I'm coming like 3-4 months after everything started, I'm coming to an event that everyone communicate.
Yeah. Okay.
So now I understand that payment gateway is not less about the technology, it's about integrating with the right, with every region has its own providers, and you've got different schemes and different ways to communicate. So it's very geographically dependent. Okay. Moving on, we'll move to the how you solve the challenges. And as always, we try to put things on the perspective of people, process, and technologies. Mm-hmm. So appreciate, let's start talking about the people. Like, what did you do when we talk about HR and how you move things around, how you move people around? What did you do in order to solve those all the challenges we spoke?
Okay. So
we didn't.
Yeah. How are you trying to solve them?
Yeah, I wanted to say that. That's a joke I will say. But yes, we are doing it. We are still doing it.
I think it's an ongoing process because you will also continue to buy companies and merge them.
So the people, I think the people challenge come in different angles. First of all, it is you know, all the companies are mature companies and you have the envelope of PayU, like for information security. They don't know what is product security. We had an anecdote before we started, like what is application security? What is a product security? No one really get into the details. So what we have today or what we had back then was information security. We had CISOs per site and they are not focusing on the product. Product is SDLC, the way you securely develop your product. Awareness, how do you create awareness in your developers? Do they know what is security in general? What do they know? What is secure development? What is secure code, secure component, etc.? Do they know what is secure, pipeline, secure technologies, etc.? That's the easy part. Everyone talk about it. And it was partially covered because you have in PCI, for example, we are heavily PCI users, you can say. It partially covered, but it is, you know, it's like high level. You don't get into the details when you are complied by certification or compliance to do something. Later on is, and that's the change I did. I was mainly focused in my previous jobs on SDLC, on the way you secure before you go to production. Maybe some controls in production, mainly in the architecture and design, but now I'm actually responsible for product security. Product security means SDLC and production. The products, our product deploy in production. So what are the controls in the infrastructures, on the network, the product itself? Do we need to develop something, some kind of a control, or do we need to take a native cloud control or deploy something else that we want? And now I need to prioritize and make sure I do all of that. But let's go back to the people challenge. So we are covered in information security. So everyone thinks we are good at security. And now people start to move in their chair when you tell them that you don't do application security at almost at all. I'm joking. They do it, but not in the level I'm coming to do it. Right? This is why I'm coming to lead the global product security. And in the production itself, no one really consider what we need to do for product security, right? Everyone take it to the extreme. And engineers don't love to take security to the extreme because it slows things, it drop things, a lot of false positive, a lot of noise, etc. How can we do it really accurate? And can we do it per platform or do we need to do it in a global manner? And people start to move in their chair and first thing they think about, okay, someone is going to take my job. And it's not really because I cannot do it globally alone. I need everyone to do it and I don't know everything, really.
You need your champions.
I need my champions. Mm-hmm. We call it differently. We call it, we are now established. We are a year in the process of establishing tribes and clans. We took other companies' approaches because they did it and it works. And now instead of site, we have a tribe. Okay. We call the site a tribe because, as we mentioned earlier, there is the technology and the people, etc., etc., and the merchants. But now we have clans. We have different clans. We have DevOps clan, and we have deployment clan, and we have SRE clan, and we have product security clan or security clan. Mm-hmm. And the purpose of the clan is, okay, we have the tribes that go in their regular development processes and the regular technology knowledge, etc. And the clans take people from the different tribes, not as a champion, because a champion, I see the definition, like a champion is someone that do partially do what you tell him as a security leader, right? You give them a scan result to go over. You tell him to integrate with someone. But when you have a clan, when you take someone from a tribe, you have the challenge of, and this is part of the people challenge or maybe the process challenge, but how do I get the resource for the right amount of time? How do I conserve the knowledge, right? I develop someone. So I take people with high percentage of time from their time and I educate them. What is application security? What is product security, production, etc.? But focus, we have real projects. It's not coming because I want to educate them. It's like I have a project to do awareness session for engineers. Now, I was an engineer. I work many, many years with engineer. Engineer will not fall into the phishing, regular phishing, right? So how do I do really cool phishing exercise? Do I do it in Slack using a public webhook, for example? Now, that's a real project that I need to investigate, research, explore, and implement code in order to establish a working process. So the people will educate, they will do it. Now they are buying into the clan and they will start propagate the security clan. What I achieve from that is the people in the tribes that are part of the clan educated, they know more, they actually do things and they spread the word and more people want to come. So people understand they are, I'm not going to replace them. I'm going to work with them and improve the way they do things. I think that I could not do it alone. As I mentioned, the global VP of engineering decided the move with the CTO and all the tribe leads are part of the effort. So things are moving and it's still like a moving deck, I can say, because each quarter I need to define the project that people would like to join and do because I still need to make them enthusiastic about it. And I need to fight with the product and the engineering, about the resources time. I know they are part of the clan. They are marked as a security clan, but they have other regular tribe exercises or tasks, etc. So it's still an ongoing ongoing challenge. More things around it. Many questions were raised for the decision, why do we need a security clan? We already have information security team in some sites, as I mentioned, the local CISOs. So also the gap of understanding, the people don't understand what is product security versus a CISO or IT in that area. Yeah. And it's still ongoing. right? Working with different managers. Part of the I think the best part is I get to travel a little bit, and I went to Bogota, for example, to the main site there, and I did like a workshop around secure code review, and I did a cool awareness session working with different people, telling them, showing them what is the difference and what we need to do versus what information security.
Excellent, interesting. I would take from that, first of all, I would take two things from that. First of all, the fact that the CISO focused on the corporate IT security,
exactly,
which is definitely
yes.
not a product lead. Second, another thing you said in short and is really interesting, and people are not aware of that. People think that application security equals SDLC, and this is it. But application SDLC stops basically at the deployment. And starting from the deployment and the ongoing production, it's totally you have to develop your own methodology of application security because SDLC is about the development. And there are many phases of application security following that.
Yes. I'm planning to share a little bit in the process and technology. It's totally different from what I did till now, as I'm responsible also for production. It means, and some of the companies work actually real DevOps, real Agile versus legacy, etc.
We can talk now about the process angle.
I did the connection between the topics. So the processes, each company in each tribe work different. Now we have they have their own technologies, their own system, platforms, etc. But they also have their own backlog, right? They have the task. They need new features for the product. They need to upgrade the product because the merchants or the customers need new features, different product teams, etc. So I'll put aside the product. Now it's the same global team, but I'll put it on the side, the team that decide about the business features. But technology-wise, now we are talking about a really cool, the process-wise, now we're talking about the really cool stuff, because how do we really do DevSecOps? What is the buzzword considered as DevSecOps? Part of it is technology oriented, but other parts are process oriented. As Moshe said, SDLC, everyone talk about SDLC. SDLC stop in a point. I think earlier than deployment, because people have said, we have SDLC, that's cool. We don't need to do anything. I still remember the discussions in HP about, do we really need to fix things before release, or can we fix it later on after release? But it's on-prem solution. If we will not fix it before the release, it will not be there in the after release, in the deployment, in the customer premise. So this is a big challenge. We need to align the processes, and the way we do it or start to do it is with the client, because I'm not going to change the way the different tribes work. Right, they have their own methodology. I need the tribe leads and the global VP of engineering to change it for me, because I'm bringing you only the application security angle, right, the product security. But what I'm doing, I'm using the people that are already part of the existing process and asking them what I need to do. And it's hard for me because I need to do different stuff in different tribes, but I will align. I understand from my previous experience that I cannot change what the business defined. So I'm working with...
The business sets the priorities.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. The business sets the priorities. The VP engineering sets the way they work. But actually, the tribe leads have the way they work, and slowly they change. So it, as I mentioned, it takes a lot of time. So how can we do it per tribe and using, as I said, the people? But now we have, instead of discrete backlogs, we have the discrete backlogs, but slowly, quarter after quarter, we're starting to have one global backlog, product backlog. We also have a security backlog. As I understand the product platform drives better, the people help me, we get the right activities into the global backlog. Till now, I had activities set in the discrete isolated backlogs, and it was specific per tribe. For example, in Central America, we need to fix input validation, or we need DDoS in a specific vendor on-prem whatever data center. But in South Africa, we need actually something else. Or in Israel, we are deployed on AWS, and we actually need some kind of a I don't know, let's say we use a web application firewall that is native for AWS. If it's good or not, we'll not get into that now. But that was I think different angles in each processes. Now with the one global backlog, it's a little bit easier. Even though I still have pushbacks, for example, I would like to do. We have today in each site different intrusion detection systems, IDS, in short. And I don't love it. Why? Because it's part of production. I need to control it. Today it's controlled partially by information security, as I mentioned, and in other sites in by the engineering teams, and they don't know anything about it. I need to take control of over that, but I don't want to control different technologies. So how can, now that I have the way to change the global backlog, people push back because they already have their IDS. They don't need the new IDS, but I'm taking a broader look about management in general, like budget and people, and how can I change it? Yeah. So it's working slowly, and that's
and the process is something that you feel that it improves, or you can automate things, or every company has its own
okay. So I think funny you ask it, because it's really related to what I'm doing these days. It's partly touches the technology aspects, because you cannot, when you are an engineering organization and you are agile, everything is most of things are based on technology, because you want to move fast and you cannot do it manually. So yeah, we are trying to move to a global, let's say CI pipeline. We want in each organization today, or each tribe, we have its own CI or build system. We have one for all. Mm-hmm. We want to have one for all. And it's moving, it's starting to move slowly, but in few months from now, we will have one global CI system. And it means, and that's the technology aspects, if today each site has its own standard for SDLC, let's say the testing phase of how do I do pen test, how do I automate pen testing or testing, how do I scan my code, how do I scan my dependencies, etc. We are going to have one standard. And people are, let's say, somewhat forced to move to the global pipeline, because that's the business decision to cut costs and improve the quality and reduce the timelines to release. And it means that if in a previous companies like Citi, for example, I had to talk with different companies, here I don't have to do it. I really need to do to define one process, and I really have to understand the people once per tribe and define one technology, and the organization will move with me because I'm part of it. I am located in the engineering, so I'm not doing something that against it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's moving, and I was really surprised. There is a dance of like, I'm going one step forward and then three steps backward and then one and a half step. But as I am under the VP, the global VP of engineering, and all the seniorities, like the senior people across companies are under as well, under AD as well, and I am working closely with the clients, the other clients. It's not like a discrete security or application security that is a silo. It's actually a team that is part of the engineering. I'm doing something. First of all, I will ask the site reliability engineering, the SRE clan lead, if it's something that is relevant to them, or how we would do it from the technology or reliability point of view. And then we are doing things together. Or the ops team, how they do it, ops clan. And if I can get into their processes, and now I'm not doing anything alone, I'm doing it with everyone else. And it is a different or a big change from other companies, because I had to do everything alone, right? Discrete from other processes. Now, if I'm doing something once, everyone are doing it for me later on.
Mm-hmm. Out of curiosity, do you maintain one backlog for change for a roadmap and one for security, or do you have the security integrated into the big backlog?
I think depends who you ask. Okay, so we have, in security wise, we have different backlogs. We have the information security backlogs, we have the local clan backlog, we have the global clan backlog. But a very smart thing Adi did was to get everything. Okay, there is discrete backlogs fine. If they are discrete, they are not going into the global backlog. No one will do them. Mm-hmm. If you want to try push it yourself, fine. It's not the way you should do things, but okay. We will try to stop you. and I really believe in our way. Decide what is really important. You can save it yourself, right, in mm-hmm. your place because you know what you do with it and improve it and change it. But define what is the most important thing for the quarter. Let's use, I don't know, 4 to 10 activities, small and big ones, mm-hmm. even less than that. And now let's get it into the global backlog for that quarter. And now information security that I need to approve because it's part of the global backlog, the local clan that I support and the global clan activities that I created are in the product. And it is prioritized like equal with other activities. But you need to keep in mind that even though it is in the one backlog, at the end, I'm sure you're all aware that there are constraints in real life. Even the backlog changed dramatically during the release mm-hmm. process, like the sprints, things can change. So it is there. You think you got the resources. You need to start next week. Something changed.
Life is what happens to you when you make other plans.
Yeah, and exactly. Last week, for example, I had an activity for next quarter that I had to get like certain amount of resources, and all of a sudden we got the resources earlier with more resources than this grid, but for a shorter amount of time. And you need to respond to that because you are a product or you will not get the resources never. Mm-hmm. So we did like an amazing pilot for different CICD scanning tools or tools in the CICD process, which no one did before in PayU in general. They just mm-hmm. took open source or whatever paid tool. And now we understand what we need to put globally as a standard.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So this will take us to the technology stack. I mean, what changes did you make to your technologies in order to support this process of joining the large companies?
Okay. So I gave a few hints yeah. earlier. Mm-hmm. I will give the context, as I mentioned earlier. Technology-wise, engineering technology-wise, there is a huge change, right? From collaboration tools, communication tools, like initially we had different Slack per tribe or back then per sites. Now we have one Slack, for example, for all the global organization, engineering organization, and we try to put everyone on that Slack as well, product and support and everyone. And everyone are encouraged to use the public channels. And mainly in English because all of the different tribes know English. You have different tribes that have other languages, but we are trying to stick with English because then I can jump into the middle of a discussion and support and have my way of thinking, or they can help me in a way, which is cool. And actually we measure that people are talking publicly versus privately, yeah. because people feel more confident talking privately with specific people than asking all of the company in a public channel. But we measure that and we see the change. We have one Confluence, for example, and the plan is to use one GitLab, for example, globally. Now we have varieties. We have Jenkins and we have Bamboo and we have whatever you want, whatever you name, we have it. And that's the CI technology. And slowly, we cannot enforce that because of the legacy, but slowly we are trying to shift to the cloud. It takes time and effort because everyone are focused, but that's part of the global platform to move to AWS, for example, and use all of the awesome features they give us in the last few years versus years before that they didn't invested in security. Now they have security. Mm-hmm. So I can, instead of buy my own, technology for researching logs, I can use one of the cool approaches AWS give me. And we use the IAM, for example, whatever needed. But now we need to do it globally and we need to connect it with other local technologies. Even, for example, it can be Okta and One Login because each site has its own IDM. And now can we connect it or do we need to shift to another one? And even a domain, do we need to change the domain to a global domain or a local domain, etc.? But that's the engineering perspective. Product security perspective, and I gave some hints, is or are related to the existing technologies. Everyone, whatever happened today was without anyone controlling it. Like someone decided they want to scan something, so they took open source, or someone gave a small budget and did it. It's not a standard, right? We use plugins in Poland, different plugins than we use for scanning secrets in repositories than we use in Zoos, for example. But it's easy to understand that because we use different technologies like source repositories, etc. So as I mentioned, we did an awesome pilot of different static dust IaaS SCA secrets in the repositories pilot a week ago, and we are still doing it in other tribes. And we decided on the right tools. Part of them are licensed tools, part of them are open source, because we totally believe in open source. I'm a big believer, but sometimes license give you a little bit easier to manage things, and you don't need to invest a lot of deployment, etc. More around that is the IDS I mentioned, and I have many more technologies or projects like that that I need my client to help me or support me to change and create a standard. It can be around logs, but that's a different challenge because you need the platform to change with the way they log things, and then I can aggregate, and I even have I join effort with the SRE because they already aggregate log, but I need the output to be analyzed a little bit differently. And some of the technology are around sunsetting legacy platforms. How can we improve with the new, modernize, reduce the risk there, because there is a lot of effort, but take out all the legacy platform. We have, it's not real legacy. It's like 10 years, 12 years, 15 years. I'm familiar with much older platform in different companies I work, but still it was a different era with less security. And no one thought about controls in the production, like even configuring a firewall in the way you should, right? And the technology, the language stack, or the language itself is insecure, for example, or with a lot of weaknesses or vulnerabilities. For example, it can be a very old Java version. And that's it, I think, for technology. We are trying to understand what will be the value to change, what is the effort, really. Each platform has its own effort. It can get 2 months. For example, we do in Central America, we are trying to sunset all the legacy. It can take up to a year to sunset like 8 application or 8 platforms. What do you do with the customer? I mentioned it earlier. Customers, some of them can seamlessly move to the global platform because they use the right approach, let's say DNS. They use the fully qualified, for example. But other merchant outcoded IPs in their mobile native code. Now, go and upgrade that mobile application. So if you change or sunset, you break the system, right? Mm-hmm. And people lose money, and a lot of money. How can you do it? Mm-hmm. And we get the approach, and people need to approach the merchants, and it takes more time, etc. That's part of the process, part of the change with people, but also the change in technology, stack. Exactly. Yeah. I think that's in a nutshell.
Okay, so I'll try to summarize this, and this is also a good time to you to think about what anything else you want to add, which we mixed. So basically, our challenge was that we have a large company, large fintech company, but it doesn't even have a backbone of its own. It's basically built from different units that you buy along the years, a different location, all of them different technology stack, different people, different processes, and you need to integrate them into one working company with at least some kind of standard for application and product security. And this is basically a challenge, and the way you handled it is first of all, from the people point of view, making sure that nobody is going to lose his job. We are going to add more responsibility. You changed the terminology, you moved into tribes and clans where you make everybody feel like they're part of something, and you gave them their basically, you don't like the word champion, so you basically selected your leads inside each team, and then you educate them and you try to make them be the security pros that inside the different clans. From the process angle, you moved into one joint backlog to make sure that you have visibility into all the engineering changes throughout the company, This means one security backlog, one changes backlog. You try to integrate into all the processes into one place under the engineering. And from the technology point of view, you try to move everybody to at least to an infrastructure that looks the same. I'm not talking about the where the stack itself, but you give them logging services and DDoS protection, and you try to make everything from a central location as much as you can. One methodology for CI/CD processes, one methodology for security testing. Pretty much it, right? Correct?
Yes. I will add one more line. Mm-hmm. For a person that loves challenges, I can say that life never stops to throw challenges at your lap if you love it, if you look for it. And if I thought I saw everything around application security, around product security, I see many, many more challenges coming ahead, and technology never stops surprising me. I learn new things every day, and I think that's it.
Yeah, I think that given your intro that you were first a developer and then moved to the cyber security and the stations that you made in your career, really I think that prepare you for this kind of job that is really global.
I agree with that.
Okay, so thank you for your time, Ori. It was very interesting.
And thank you for coming, and to all our listeners, goodbye.